Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most cowardly podcast network.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched Jennifer's Body. Jennifer's Body is a 2009 horror comedy film written by Diablo Cody and directed by Karen Kusama. The film follows Anita Needy Lesnicki, a nerdy, reserved bookworm, and her best friend, Jennifer Check, an arrogant, conceited cheerleader. After getting into a van with a creepy band, Jennifer comes back with an appetite for human flesh. As their male classmates are steadily killed in gruesome attacks, Needy must uncover the truth behind her friend's transformation and find a way to stop the bloodthirsty rampage. It's a very special episode today because we are once again joined by our good friend, Cassandra Page. Welcome, Cass.
Hello.
Hey.
I am very excited for this film.
Good. So obviously we've watched this one because you have kindly recommended it.
As I would to any living person.
Do you? When did you first watch this movie?
I think I watched the film, oh my goodness, actually I'm not really sure when I watched it. It was years ago. Mm-hmm. Because I have it on DVD,
oh, wow.
So I should give you a time frame.
That's a deep cut. That is a deep, deep cut.
Yes, have it on DVD. So it was a while ago because we did end up having a Blu-ray player because my brother got a PS3.
Yeah.
So it was many, many moons ago. I don't think I saw it when it came out. I think it was like maybe a little later.
Yeah.
I think this film's a great one because I remembered it recently because I was talking to Mia from Cynical Cartoons, which is also on our network, and she was talking about one of the, like, this movie has a classic soundtrack in that it was so carefully considered and designed for its audience, and it's so teen, which I just froth. But we were talking about it, and then I hadn't really realized that. Because when I sort of liked it, it wasn't really popular. It just didn't really have much about it. But I'm like, oh, this film's weird as hell. I love it. But it had this almost renaissance, I guess, a decade after it was made. And there have been, I've read articles about it where people are like, oh, when this film first came out, it just did terribly. It tanked. It was really, really not well received at all for a number of reasons, which I'm sure we'll all get into. But a decade on, people are revisiting it and saying, hang on, I think this was ahead of its time. I think the things it looks at, they're realizing that the marketing was incorrect. They're realizing that the audience, the demographic that the film was aiming for was never actually addressed in any of it. So now people are finding it, being like, oh, this is a film for me and enjoying it. And I think I definitely fall into the category of like, like the I remember listening, watching the movie and just being like, oh, the song I liked. Oh, the song I liked.
Can we talk very quickly about the music and how perfect the fake emo band's song is?
Oh, it's incredible.
They like,
that
it,
is the most distillation of an emo band in the late 2000s. Yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah. I think they absolutely hit the nail on the head with making it, because when they're first playing the song in the bar, it's got all the makings of like that pop punk sound literally that the film has all throughout the movie. They have all these bands that this band is emulating and recreating, but the chorus sucks. It's so annoying and it's draining, which means every time you hear it, you feel a bit sick. And especially, it just drones.
Yeah.
And you're just like, ugh, and you feel needy every time it comes up.
Oh, I tell you what, we like... I just want everybody to know that Adam Brody in this movie is perfectly cast.
Mm-hmm.
He should only play... He's too, in my opinion, based on just whatever, Adam Brody has three perfect performances in movies. And in all of them, he kind of plays a dick.
Yeah.
Yes.
None of them are the OC. I'm sorry. But his whole thing is like a nerdy heartthrob is bullshit. If you want it, peak Adam Brody, it's this movie.
Yeah.
It's his role in Ready or Not, yeah, where he's a kind of shitty brother, and also his role as a weird assistant in Thank You for Smoking. He plays, yes, douchebag so perfectly.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I pose something to you?
Please.
Yes.
Just as a tangent, my housemate has been watching The OC as it's been going, and then I found out one of my best friends has also been watching The OC, and I'm constantly, I live in the same house as my housemate, so I see a lot of The OC. Like, Adam Brody's character in The OC sucks.
I hate him.
He sucks.
And, like, I think it's marketing again. Everyone's like, oh, he's the cool nerd. He's like, they're like, well, we're going to intentionally make him a bit neurotic, but he sucks.
He's a piece of shit.
Oh, my God.
He's a creepy, yeah, piece of, yeah, shit, who, no, names his boat after a girl he has a boner for.
But then when he gets her, it doesn't matter.
Oh my God, I wish your boy would do that for me.
The key to Cass's heart, name a boat after her. Doesn't even have to be a good boat.
Oh, and just another really quick side note on the OC. We are not through the OC yet, and so far there have been three different characters and four different events where someone has just gotten on a boat to escape their problem.
Oh yeah, they love it.
It's like a through line. Three different characters. One did it twice, right, where they were like, they're like, you know what, I'm gonna start sailing. Adam Brody's character did,
yeah,
that.
Great.
He got scared of something in his life and he jumped on a boat.
Right. It's because it's so relatable. We can all relate to that. The times we've just jumped on a boat and sailed our problems away.
We've all been there.
Has that show aged terribly, Cass?
No, I would say, I would say that, okay, there are cultural things in there which you're like, well, we wouldn't do that now or then, but not many. And I think it's the same thing where we have a revisionist lens on it. Mm. The things that stand out to me now, like rewatching The OC, well, it's actually the first time I've watched it. The main character, Marissa, okay, first of all, goodness gracious, looking up the ages of the actors, because in any teen thing, they're all in their 20s or whatever. Misha, yeah, Barton was actually 17.
Oh.
Everyone else was in their 20s, oh, wow, but she, yikes, was actually 17 when the first pilot was released. So her performance is like, she does an amazing job, especially since she's a literal child.
Yeah.
But her character is genuinely kind and just tries to be kind to everyone.
Hmm.
And it's just, it's nice. The friendship between her and Summer is really beautiful to watch. Mm. And like the way they handle friendships in that show is really nice. And it's so tragically rare. And I think that's another one of the reasons why I really like Jennifer's Body. Not that that's a good or healthy relationship, but just exploring a female friendship in a realistic way, I think is just really nice. And it was also what I liked about Train to Busan when they had overt kindness. Because I think that it's often just excluded as a narrative thing because it's seen as like not interesting, but it is. I think it's one of the most interesting things that you can have within a story is someone trying to relate to another person in a genuine way because there are so many ways it can go wrong.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
These are my thoughts on the OC and women.
Well, with Jennifer's Body, I honestly thought their relationship, Needy and Jennifer's relationship, was easily one of the most interesting parts about it.
Yes.
Because, like, watching it, that the intensity of it and the sort, like, obviously the love-hate thing and it was obviously, like, toxic. Like, it was uneven and it was, no one was really looking out for each other. But you could also get it. And, like, I read an interview with Diablo Cody about this and she talked about it. And she was saying, like, at that time, like, she goes, I've got friends I'm close with now, but there is at no point do I need them to spend the night. And for us, we just have to stay in the same bed and talk all night. Where back when she was in high school, like, yeah, she just had to, because that's how deep and intimate those relationships are, that they're this other level of friendship that doesn't really exist in later life. But at that time, they're basically like a romantic relationship. And then obviously doubly so because Needy did have some feelings towards her. So I found that incredibly interesting. And even like, obviously that I really liked how they took the two, the nerd and the cheerleader and just said, nope, they're best friends. Like, oh, it doesn't make sense. And like sort of a tip of the hat to it.
Yeah.
And at the start, I really felt like they both personified those stereotypes. And then as the movie went on, that became less important to me because it was just about their relationship.
But even the great thing I think it captures about teenage relationships and particular high school friendships is that when you actually look back on it, they make no fucking sense. Like you are bonded. When you're an adult, you make friends based on things that you mutually have in common. So like, you know, we're friends because we like the same movies. We, you know, like the same stuff. We have similar tastes in humor and stuff like that. But in high school, you can become friends with anyone because your mutual thing is that you're both at school together.
Yeah.
So you can end up friends with people that when you, the minute you leave high school, you're like, yeah, I'm not going to talk to that person again. There's people that I do still talk to from high school, but there's people here like, no, we're just completely different. Totally. Like that, the only thing we had in common was school. And I think that's the, for me anyway, that was the believable part of this movie. It was like, well, they were friends since they were kids before high school puts a label on you and is like, you are now old enough where you have to be one thing or another thing. Whereas because they were, their friendship sort of started when it didn't matter. So yeah, sure. They were still friends, even though it made sense to nobody.
Mm.
Made sense. Like it made sense in its own lack of sense.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think as well, a thing I really liked is that because they had sort of all those years behind them, the relationship was able to be backed up that much. But it was clear that there was so much love.
Mm.
Weirdly, like even though it became like bad and codependent and there were so many elements to it that weren't great. Oh, only a couple of elements that weren't great. But the overall thing is that it was solid.
Mm.
You know, I was reading just because the whole resurgence thing about this film is so, and the reinterpretations and everything and the revised reviews of everything around it are so fascinating just to see how cultural sort of everything changes. One of them was specifically looking at the film and saying that it doesn't matter what happens in the film, even with like looking at popular things with teenage things, like, you know, getting attacked by boys and this and that. It didn't matter. Their relationship was always the center. They were always the most important thing to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter how bad Jennifer got, even though Needy wanted to stop her. It was always their relationship at the core. Like they always had each other in the front of their minds.
Mm. That's very interesting.
Huh. Especially true when it's Needy trying to kill her. The only thing she wants, she's like, I'm going to have to kill my best friend.
Yeah. Yeah. And Carney, I'm keen to hear your thoughts because I know from your Letterboxd review that this movie did nothing for you. So I want to know what your thoughts were.
I feel like I watched a different film to you guys.
Hey, I want to, before you get into ripping it to shit, I just want to say I get it.
I'm not gonna rip it.
Sean, before you tee off, I want to say, and I said this before, and I said I was going to say it in the podcast, so it could be on the record. I really hope we get a Megan Fox revival based on the sort of resurgence of this film.
Mm.
Because if Shia LaBeouf can get one and McConaughey can get one, Megan Fox deserves one, you know? She got shat on by studios for so long and she's actually good.
She was brilliant in this film.
I agree with. She's fantastic. And I think she's partly because of the whole situation with Michael Bay and Spielberg got involved with it and she just sort of got like, I don't know, turned inside out by the media and everybody just has this perception of her. But you watch her in this film. And while I don't really like this film, she's actually brilliant in this movie.
Yeah.
Like she outshines Amanda Seyfried completely, I think. She's like, it's easily her best role. And it's a shame that they mismarketed it so much that no one really saw it. It kind of bombed. And then it took probably 5-10 years before people went, hang on, this is like, and it's now like a cult classic. Mm. But me personally, I didn't like it. And I didn't have the same view as you guys about the strength of that friendship. I came into this sort of wanting a story about great friends and then something happens to Jennifer. She turns, is possessed or whatever, and then it's about her friend having to save her.
Right.
And it didn't feel like that at all. It just felt like she's a piece of shit from the outset. I don't understand the friendship. Like I do on some level, but on another I'm kind of like, I didn't invest in Needy. I didn't really like her character. I certainly didn't invest in Jennifer because she's just horrible. She's like really just rude to everybody. She's making 9/11 jokes. She just seems like a terrible person and a terrible friend. And so I was like, I wasn't up for the fight that the character should be to try and save her. Mm. And also part of it was, and I'll take full responsibility for this. Tom, you and I have recently read this fantastic book by Grady Hendrix called My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Oh, yes.
It's brilliant. Like, yep. I highly recommend it. And that is about two inseparable childhood best friends who are about 16 years old, and one of them gets essentially possessed by the devil. And then it's all about her other friend, our protagonist, going through hell, essentially. And it's all about, will their friendship, is their friendship strong enough to beat the devil, right, basically?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I wanted from this story.
Mm.
So that is my fault for bringing what I want into it. And it just wasn't that at all.
Yes.
And honestly, it shocked me because I thought it was going to be about Needy trying to save her friend because they have a beautiful friendship.
Mm.
When instead it was a toxic friendship and she's just going to end up killing her. And it didn't, yeah, not for me.
See, I completely understand where you're coming from, but for me, I would not have enjoyed the film anywhere near as much if that was the plot. If they were like, I reckon through the power of, like, friendship, we can figure out a way to save her or whatever. I don't think I would have liked it. I liked how strange it was. I liked how it looked at that imbalanced relationship where you're sort of, you love someone and you're a bit infatuated with them. You don't, like, nothing's clear. Like,
yep.
Nothing was clear to any of those characters. Like, I love that you could see at all times that Needy had no idea how she felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's such a quintessential, like, being 16 or 17 or whatever, and just having these people in your life. You're like, yeah, we're friends, and just having no clue, not an actual clue of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really interesting to have her going through all of that and having that, coming to terms with a toxic relationship, having her boyfriend say, like, you just do whatever she says, and her be like, no, it's we have things in common, we do all this, and like her trying to rationalize her feelings that she has for another person, not understanding that she's being taken advantage of, and then having to kill her and having all these other things, and because she's come from a position of constantly defending her at every single turn, and then all of a sudden she has to overcome an even bigger hurdle, because she won't even do that at a base level, to be like, she's mean. She's like, oh, it's just
her. Yeah.
I think I liked that. Yeah.
I think that's what I liked about it too, where because the seeds of their toxic relationship already existed before the possession, and Needy was so under her thumb that she couldn't grapple with that, she couldn't get over that, then having to kill her, it just raises the stakes so much higher. So for our protagonist, she's got to go so much further to achieve the goal, which she, like, obviously well and truly does. And I want to get into the marketing, but I thought I would ask first if we were scared or not, because I think it's going to tie in. So were we scared watching this movie?
Yes.
No.
Oh.
No. There is one scene that I've got. And rewatching it, I was like, oh, yeah, fuck, this scene makes me stressed. It's the scene when Needy comes back from the bar burning down after Jennifer's gone, and Jennifer shows up at her house.
Yes.
That scene is fucked.
Yeah.
I hated it. It's her walking through the house, and the first time I saw it, I knew something fuck was going to happen because it's a horror. And the second time I was like, oh, this is the scene where Jennifer's really weird and vomits black shit everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's literally, you know...
I agree.
That is a genuinely spooky scene.
Yes. And I had the exact same experience where I thought, oh, that scene got me. And I was actually wanting to ask you, Cass, because for me, that scene it just relies completely on classic horror setups and reveals, you know, like the little thing in the background.
Yeah.
The tension's building. There's empty space that we know is going to get filled by something. She closes the door. Oh, no one's actually there. Those sorts of tricks. So for you, who's more of a horror fan, I think, than any of us, do those tricks still work on you, or is it the sort of thing where you're like, well, no, I've seen them enough that it doesn't have the same effect anymore?
I think for me it's gotten to the stage of, as I've said previously, with any sort of genre, you have to do something different but also nail the format, and I think that really falls into nailing the format. Like, it doesn't evoke the sleep paralysis fear that apparently I crave so dearly, but I think it builds tension in a good way, and I think... It's It's like watching a rom-com, yeah. And you sort of know where it's going. That, like, she comes downstairs and everything's dark, so you know all the beats the scene is going to hit, and it's just a matter of writing it.
Yeah.
Writing it, seeing everything that happens, and just enjoying it for what it is. And even though I didn't find anything in the scene, I think something I really like about that scene is just it's so weird. It comes at a point in the film where you have no idea what's happened to it. And, yeah, it's a horror movie. We know something's going to come up. But she disappears. She gets into a van and she shows up at the house covered in blood. And you have nothing.
Yeah.
You have nothing to go on. Yep. So you are the chorus in Needy's life, you know. You experience all of those beats with her. And I really like the flashback to that scene. Something I really like about this film as well, which I guess is a bit of a tangent, but the way that I know what you mean, like Jennifer's sort of the better character and she has this really great performance, but they give Needy all of these beats that emphasize emotional damage that would actually be done in a horror, because often it's just people crying or screaming or whatever. But when they have that flashback to her having to scrub her kitchen floor, and you suddenly realize that the aftermath of that is hours of work. She has hours of time to think. She still has no idea what has happened. And then she rocks up and she has all of this emotional, not baggage, but she still has like this. She has not been able to stop thinking for 12 hours straight. Yeah. And Jennifer's like, oh, hey. And she's like, how are you okay? And she is the only one who seems to react properly to, not react properly, but you watch her journey because of the fire. And for anyone though, like, she is the one who seems to bear the burden of tragedy, and she is the one who is constantly addressing what has happened. And you just don't really get that in horror usually. It's usually people going from one thing to another and to be fair, in a lot of horror, people don't really have time to think. Yeah. Or if they're coming from a place of, you know, ghosts or supernatural things, often the grieving is before the horror stuff happens. Like, you get all that beforehand, but she is thrown into the middle of it and works through it in real time. Oh, and as well, when she starts figuring it out and her boyfriend is like, hey, I think you should get help, because of course that's what you would do.
Yeah, absolutely. He's actually being supportive, but
he's being so supportive, and he's like, this is something I think you need help, you need this, and he's not being mean to her. He is genuinely trying to help, and of course you would do that. And I think it's more isolating because you are watching her suffer with all these emotions and then still not get believed.
Yeah.
Mwah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I tell you what, the other thing we haven't touched on is that this movie, for me, gave me possibly the greatest worst sentence I've ever heard in my life.
Yes.
And that is when Jennifer, I think it's when, I want to say it's when she's going after the emo kid, but it might be when she's going after Chip.
Mm.
When she says, "You give me such a weddy."
Oh.
Fuck. What a line in cinema history. What a line in cinema history.
She does it well.
The script in this movie, the script in this movie is jarring.
Yeah.
But it's self-contained, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You get thrown into the deep end and you start kicking. And then by the end of the film, you're like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is for cutting boxes.
Is there there's a bit, isn't there? Isn't there a line where there's a sound and Amanda Seyfried's shocked and she says, oh, cheese and fries, yeah, or something like that?
Yeah, she does. I think
he talks like that.
I had the experience where watching it, because so, like you said earlier, Cass, like so much of it is like, it's so teen and it's so, especially teen of that era.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I was a teen, and I'm like, part of me was watching going, maybe we did talk like that back then. I kind of can't remember. Like the rest of it is so on point that maybe that is the dialogue we spoke with.
Hearing someone get called a dill hole at some point in the movie, I was like, fuck, I use that all the time.
Yeah.
Can I tell you the bit that I laughed the hardest at?
Please.
Yes.
It's such a dumb bit, but it's like, it's when, yeah, you can guess, Tom?
I reckon I can guess.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay, it involves J.K. Simmons.
No, no, but which bit's that?
Oh, I thought it was the bit where he hears the guy screaming in the woods and is like, yep, get it out, kids.
Oh, yeah. I think there's quite a few bits in this movie that I like a lot more than I thought. It's when they're having sex, when Needy's having sex with her boyfriend and she's having the flashes and everything, and he just does that beat and the look on his face when he goes, am I too big?
Yeah.
Yeah. So funny, man.
Oh, boy. Well, Carney, I think your experience is really interesting because you went in with different expectations than I think the people of 2009 did. But you went in with the expectations and then because of that, didn't get the movie you wanted. And as you were saying earlier, Cass, the marketing was cooked on this thing back in 2009. And so people didn't get the movie they were kind of promised. They were promised a sexy romp starring Megan Fox in all her sexiness. And instead we got this sort of twisted, very unique movie about female friendship at a teenage level. So I think to me, I'm like, I'm curious, the audience of young males who went in hoping just for sexiness, that really they're the ones that should almost be scared, because really when you break it down, the people they would maybe want to be in this movie, as in the people Jennifer's seducing,
no,
you don't want to be that person. That's the person who gets murdered and eaten. So, like, to me, I'm like, that's really where the fear should almost be coming from, of this, like, this woman who's hell-bent on rightful revenge. But also, there was the thing for me watching it. I'm like, none of the guys she killed were that, at least we didn't see them be that evil.
Mm.
Where if she'd gone one by one and slaughtered the band, you'd be like, bring it on. That's awesome. They clearly deserve it. They are literally evil. But the obviously, like, the foreign exchange student just was a nice, sweet foreign exchange student. The jock was genuinely distraught over the death of his friend. And then the emo kid was just an emo kid who, who had a crush on her. And, you know, so I think it could have, I don't know if it would have been scarier or less scary. It probably would have actually been less scary if she'd gone after the bandmates. But I do think it's interesting how they were all kind of innocents.
Well, I think it raises the stakes because I have seen this film labeled as a revenge film specifically. That's the thing. Like, they say that she's possessed by a demon. So if she was getting revenge, that's doesn't really match up. There's no reason for Needy to stop her. There's no reason for, you know, anyone to stop her. There's nothing, you know, for the audience, there's nothing wrong happening because you're seeing someone who was trying to kill someone, you know, get their comeuppance. I think that's almost better because you are watching the people who should be suffering slowly rise up throughout the film, and you constantly get that recurring sound throughout the whole thing, and it makes you angry, and it's that thing where you get to join in on the rage, and it's just something that I think that's the thing. Like, the film has so many things that just go that are horrible. Like, there's the fire, there's the sacrifice, and then there's a demon possession where people who are innocent are dying. It's just horrid thing after horrid thing. It's not a clean cut revenge thing. I have, as I said, I've read interpretations about it specifically being revenge, but it is really different. It would have been a completely different film if they had gone after the band.
But even the revenge thing, like, doesn't work because the idea, like, Jennifer is the villain, and she's the villain from the start too. Like, she's not a great person. And so for it to be like, oh, she's going to go after the band, again, you get a completely different story. But also you don't get that really great point where halfway through she pivots to only killing people that Needy likes.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's just that great moment where Colin asks her out and Needy's like, I think he's cool. And the looker and Jennifer's like, oh, you do? Okay. It's like,
This should have been marketed as a black comedy horror about toxic friendship. Like, that's just basically what it is. If someone had said that to me going in, my experience of watching it would have been completely different, I think.
There was one scene that did make me feel slightly differently about Jennifer and kind of understand more the backstory, I think, of her character, which is when she was putting on the makeup and then she just smears it across her face. And she's kind of like looking at herself in the mirror with this, like, I don't know. To me, it was like a question of like, who are you and those sorts of thoughts. And I don't know, for a minute there, I kind of got, oh, okay, she's like, she has been pushed into a stereotype, which is like so true for also Megan Fox, the person, as well as this character. And so I do think that because of that, there is an element of revenge, but it's not necessarily for the individuals or any one person. It's almost just like everyone, because it's all a bit shit and we make, you know, people feel like shit and force them into these boxes and say, yes, you are the nerd and yes, you are the, you know, overly sexed cheerleader or whatever. So I don't know. I thought that scene was really well done and kind of gave me a little bit more to think about. All right. Well, next, did they act wisely or foolishly?
Needy did everything within her power that she could have done.
Are you saying within the power of her character, as in like her flaws? She kind of was pushed to the boundaries of what she personally could do or just what any person could do?
I guess both. Like, I don't think she did anything that was... No, you're so right. Within her character. Within her character of what she was able to do because she's specifically fighting against, you know, as I said, she defends her on the most base level things. She will let her get away with anything and there's... this massive push as to where the boundaries have to sort of stop. But something I really like about the film is, and I do like it when this happens properly, when they've got characters who are young or they're kids or whatever, and they're just kids. They make dumb children decisions.
Yeah,
of course. The guy rocks up at that house. He's like, you don't live here. Don't go in.
But he's horny.
But you're like,
he's a teenage boy with a boner. He cannot think about anything else.
Yeah, I don't think there was a decision made in the film that wasn't, you know, great for the characters.
Yes. Yeah, I think I agree with that. And that, like, the decisions they made for who they were and the age they're at definitely... should be taken into account. And I think, for that part of it, I think mostly Needy acted wisely. There was a few, like, obviously she could have come down on Jennifer harder or tried to, like, be like, well, people are dying. It seems pretty clear that you're the one doing it. But because of her own already set up flaws, that to me she couldn't push past that. So I think for her, when she could, she finally, you know, acted wisely. But I don't think she acted outrightly foolishly at any point either.
No. And, you know, stepping up to confrontations is a really, really, really big thing that you have to learn trial by fire.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It all checks.
Yeah, I agree. All right, then how would we do in this scenario? So let's say the four of us are at this high school buds, and I don't think any of us should be Jennifer. I think we need to collectively escape her.
Yeah.
So one of our classmates becomes a succubus and is hunting people.
So I'm dead.
Oh, just
letting you all know, I'm dead. I would be like, you wanna go on a date with me? Okay, let's go on it. Oh, I'm dead. I know what teenage me was like, okay?
He was horny and he died.
She'd be halfway through eating you and you're like, is this what sex is like?
I've never watched these porns before.
That's more teeth than I thought, but I guess.
It's kind of hot.
So you know the scene where Jennifer first appears back after she's been taken off in the van and she vomits up all the black stuff and she's eating chicken off the floor and she makes that extremely... animal devil sort of sound.
Yeah.
To me, like, I understand why Needy wouldn't have done anything, but my first instinct is like, well, I gotta call an ambulance because Nobody should. This is the same thing as the Evil Dead. Remember when that character just vomited up so much? Mm. You're like, well, that's not normal.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
What the fuck? Also, you're eating chicken off the floor. That already is weird. The vomit's bad. That sound you made, that's horrible. I'm going to call an ambulance.
Mm.
Needy wouldn't have done it probably because she would have thought, I don't want my friend to get in trouble.
Yeah.
For all I know, she went in the van. She did like maybe some drugs with those guys. I don't want her to get in trouble. I got to clean this up before my mum gets home so nobody knows about it. But yep. My guard is probably more up, and I'd be like, well, straight away, that's fucked.
Let's get some medical attention to this literal child, please.
Yeah, sure. Counterpoint to all of this, Needy tries. She literally picks up her mobile and tries to ring, and Jennifer pins her to the wall and does that whole, are you scared?
Damn. Mm. Well,
and then at the last second, doesn't eat her because of the BFF necklace.
But there's four of us. Yeah. So the pinning to the wall, I don't know, man.
Mm.
Nah, we're all dead. I think we're all dead. I'd die.
Yeah.
Well, I think Damo, Sean, and I are dead.
I'd probably faint when I saw the black vomit. I'd see the black vomit, and then I'd throw up, and then you'd see me throw up, and you'd throw up, and then we'd all just be throwing up, and it'd be fucked. And Cass would probably be fine. Cass would be like, nah, this is good.
No, I'm the one scrubbing the floor at the end, going through the turmoil, like, oh, aww. No.
Scrubbing the vomit off the floor and crying.
The salt helps break down the enzyme.
I do think, I will say, and again, it's the strength of the show, is that I think we would fare better than Needy because we would immediately jump to possession.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are willing, we're scared, so we are absolutely going to lean into any possibility. We'll be like, demon, fuck, all right. So we'd be on to holy water, we'd be on to exorcisms, we'd be all over it.
Tom, you and I just read that book. We're ready. We'd just call an exorcist straight away.
Bang, call him up.
So is that what you do? So let's say she's come in, she's vomited, she's gotten away, we're all at school together the next day, we're coming up with a plan. Is step one, call an exorcist?
No, we do the exorcism ourselves.
I was going to say, because I don't know how you find an exorcist.
Yeah, we're a ragtag team of teams.
Yes.
Damo, we don't go to school. Damo, we don't go to school the next day. We don't do the whole, we'll leave in the morning. We do it straight away.
Okay.
We tire up and just Google exorcisms and we just go for it.
All right.
Maybe she's passed out, and while she's passed out, we watched the film, The Exorcist, just to get some tips, and then we're ready to go and we just do it.
That movie's long.
We can restrain her by ourselves some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if we could get her on that first night because she's already, like, the way she does pin Needy to the wall, she's already got some strength behind her.
Yeah, because she already ate that guy.
Yeah. So I feel like she has to get away, and then we need to make a trap for her, I think.
We do have time to trap her. Of course, the dead bodies will start piling, but we are able to trap her. I will say, though, if I'm with Tom, if she tries, I'm dead. Okay. Immediately.
Hang on. What are we trying to do here? Are we trying to save her from the devil, or are we just... Do we hate her? We're sick of her and we're jumping to the end.
Nah, Cass and I are dead because we're horny. So
yeah, if Tom and I don't know what's happening, if she gets to us first, you have a two-man team.
Okay. Well, then that becomes...
Shit.
So the way I see it, Carney, all right, if she's killed Cass and Tom, then we want to kill her. If she hasn't yet killed Cass and Tom and we're a ragtag bag of teens, I think we have a twin goal of one... unpossessing her, and two, stopping each other from being horny.
That's a fun plot. Can we make that
film? Yes.
Just having your little support network to be like, we need to figure out how to do a proper exorcism. We're going to have to source all these things. No!
Are you texting her a photo of yourself?
No.
No. Did you tell her where you are? Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
It's like that Seinfeld episode, The Contest, except it's Jennifer's body.
So Tom's Kramer.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom's Kramer straight away. The first sign of skin and Tom's like, well, I'm out.
Bows out gracefully into his grave.
Nah, not even skin. She just shows me some attention, like strokes my face. Because that's the thing, right? If Jennifer wanted to be a more effective killer, this is the thing. Everyone's like, nah, you want to seduce them. No. Men just want to be cuddled and have their faces touched. That's it. That's all you want. Just kiss me on the forehead a little bit and cup my face. Then eat me. Go on. I'll die happy.
All right. Well, Tom, you're dead for very sad reasons. Tom, I got to be honest, this feels like the first time you've betrayed yourself. I was a little satisfied with that.
Because he was horny.
Yeah.
He was horny. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, Cass and Sean.
Yeah.
Are you able to keep your horniness levels down long enough to exorcise the demon from her, do we reckon? Are we up to this task?
Depends how quickly we can do it.
Right.
Yeah. Speed is the key.
I reckon for me, I'm going to have to reframe it where I'm like, if I save her, maybe she'll fall in love with me.
Oh, Cass, that's very good. Yeah, this you're playing good. The long game.
Then I've got her for life.
Yeah, short-term gratification. That's for Tom. I'm playing the long game. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay. Okay, now I'm starting to be a bit more confident that we're going to pull this off.
I reckon we can do it.
Well, like, Needy went to the library that did have, like, an occult section. Small, she said, but there was an occult section.
Which they made a joke about.
Yeah, so I think...
He's like, our library has an occult section? She's like, it's small.
Small, but yeah. So, Tom, I think you're bowing out early because she touched your face. Then the three of us are hitting up that occult section. Cass is... consistently convincing herself you're in it for the long game, don't fall for those tricks.
Yep.
And then it's just about speed. So how we need to quickly get her cornered and exercised ASAP. How do we do that?
Babe, Sean, she sent her a text. I'll meet you at my spooky abandoned house. She's hungry because she hasn't fed. She'll be desperate.
Yeah, babe.
Oh, yeah.
But then if I've got access to the phone, that's bad for me because then text could be flying back and forth. And
well, then it's Cass. Cass is survive. The strongest because she's playing the long game. Yep. So Cass is like, hey, we should hang out.
Okay, I'm going to text her as you, right? It'll be from my phone and she doesn't know I exist yet, but she will. I text her from your phone. I have to keep the plan in action, but it's not like I'll get too involved because if I do too good a job, then she'll fall in love with you. And I can't have that.
And then you'll kill me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Sean and Damo, if I need to eliminate competition by slipping up. What? Who gave you your phones back? Weird.
I think we just found how this ends. So I'm pretty sure Cass kills the two of us and her and Jennifer live happily ever after.
Yeah, Instead of freeing the demon from her, I get my own.
This is bad news for the Scaredy Boys, but I'm very happy for you, Cass.
Thank you.
And at least Tom got a nice face rub before he went. So.
I did. Hey, I'm living the dream over here with a small victory, with a soft face.
Dying happy, touched.
And that is all the Scaredy Talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
I've been Tom.
And I've been Cass.
And if you Scaredy listeners have any comments, would like to say hi, all the rest of the stuff, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at ScaredyBoys. Or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Psychic of Dowie.
I'm at Awkward Trade.
And I'm at Cass Page.
Thanks so much for joining us, Cass. It was a lovely time.
I had a scream.
Stay scared, everyone.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.